Greetings and welcome to Cathartic Yardstick with your hosts, Ray and Mark. In this episode, your intrepid hosts ponder the meaning of life's journey upon graduation. As John Donne once said, "Be thine own palace or the world's thy jail." How very true. Tonight's episode, Jailin' It.
We've got the Yetis fired up. Welcome again to the Cathartic Yardstick podcast with Ray and Mark. I'm Ray in New York, and Mark is joining me from Virginia.
Where I'm supposed to be.
Where you're supposed to be. We're both where we're supposed to be. Well, it was kind of an interesting week. A lot of stuff going on. Stephen Hawking came out posthumously with his final book. It was put together by his family. The title is Brief Answers to Big Questions, which sounds like he's oversimplifying things a little bit. The big takeaway everyone was getting from the book was he states rather conclusively that there is no God, no possibility that God exists, and that the universe spontaneously was created out of nothing according to the laws of the universe, which I don't know. I don't know exactly what he's basing that on. I'm not taking a side either way whether there's God or not. I'm going to sit right in the agnostic slot as far as this goes, but He talks about the Big Bang Theory. He believes in the Big Bang Theory, but I don't know that there's all that much evidence for the Big Bang Theory, because one of the problems with it is it supposes that all creation, everything in the universe created was started with this one giant explosion, and everything started scattering from that. But according to, from at least my understanding of the laws of physics, there should be equal amounts of matter and antimatter, and there just aren't. Also, if there's that much matter and antimatter in close proximity, it should have immediately imploded after exploding, and that didn't happen. And you know, as far as we know, and everything in this universe, there is much less antimatter than matter. So I'm not sure how you can justify the Big Bang Theory when it still doesn't seem to fit. Also, a lot of what he's saying seems to really fall along the same lines as some of the proofs for God's existence. Back in college, we had to take two philosophy classes. We had to take logic and epistemology, and we had to take metaphysics. And a lot of metaphysics was going over arguments for the existence of God. And one of them was the ontological argument, which essentially says, I mean, a big part of it is that because you can conceive of God, God exists. You know, you could not conceive of God if he wasn't there, which I think is a lot of the argument for the Big Bang Theory. Because you can conceive of the Big Bang Theory, it must exist. So, it seems like it's on almost as shaky grounds as the existence for God as the existence for the Big Bang Theory. Neither one seems to be based on very solid proof. I mean, some of the stuff, the measurements, the proofs in physics, especially when you get to on the subatomic level, the measurements are so minute and so fleeting that it's hard to understand, for at least for me, what's the difference between a real effect and what's just, you know, test error or instrument error. Any thoughts on that, Mark?
Well, I think the other thing going on is that there's lots of presumptions in there, unstated presumptions, almost like if there was a Big Bang Theory, then there must not be the existence of God. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, a lot of things can exist simultaneously, can't they? Can there be a metaphysical presence that either set up the Big Bang or runs separately from the Big Bang? But I think it's kind of presumptuous to sit there and say, I know how they're interrelated, ergo, if one exists, the other does not.
Right. And even within the ontological argument in metaphysics, God is frequently referred to as the prime mover, the uncaused cause. So that's not at all consistent with the Big Bang Theory. So there you go.
There you go.
A couple other things he mentioned. He said that he did believe that there were aliens out there, that there was intelligent life other than us, and that time travel may be possible in the future. Which, as we've settled on this show, that there time travel is impossible and it's never going to happen because they'd be here by now.
Is not.
Is so.
Not.
Where are they? Where
Let's
are the time travelers?
Alex Trebek. He knows.
He knows everything.
About, Stephen freaking Hawking as I care about Alex Trebek. He knows the answers to everything.
I wouldn't want to know the answers to everything. It takes all the mystery out of life, right?
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
But
let's see. Okay. Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm trying to provide some incidental music.
Yes, I think we should have more of that.
We have to have an interview with Alex Trebek.
Let's get him. We'll tell him we're a big podcast with 5 million listeners.
That's right. He
said,
won't know.
Yeah, I said, well, I've never heard of you. We're really big. We're really big in this area. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, Ray. The answer was the Duke of Earl.
Another thing that people have been talking a lot about recently is the lack of civility in politics and how our nation is more divided than it's ever been. But for those of us who lived through the late 60s, early 70s, things were bad back then. It got to the point where, say around 1970, 1971, when the Vietnam protests were at their peak in that whole, you know, Vietnam War era, that bombings were a regular occurrence. And I saw one statistic from the FBI that in an 18-month period around then, there were 2,500 bombings in the country. Now, they weren't big bombings. Some were just tiny ones. They then tended to be at night in unoccupied areas, but it was a big thing. You know, people were throwing Molotov cocktails at ROTC buildings on college campuses, and we had the National Guard shooting at unarmed students at Kent State. Things were bad. There were race riots,
political assassinations. And so I remember I was a news junkie even as a kid, but I remember watching, trying to figure out as if the fabric of society was coming apart. It was very hard to figure out.
Yeah, I saw a headline this week, and they were talking about, is this it? Are we headed towards a civil war? Will we ever be the same again? But a lot of it, and Mark, you mentioned this earlier this week when we were talking, it's kind of a pendulum. You know, it's kind of swings between, you know, tribalism and globalism, and especially through, you know, the 90s and the early 2000s, we were really heavily into the globalism. And, you know, it just kind of swung back towards that tribalism. And it's gone back and forth, I think, throughout history.
I think odds are it is just a phase. You know, one thing I keep thinking of is the fact that there's been so many advances, things like, you know, the internet and it just makes me wonder whether we can hit the 21st century, but it's going to be a ways longer until we actually grow into it. Until then, it's just growing pains. That's the optimistic view.
Yeah, and we have technology now that I think we don't have the wisdom to use. Technology has outstripped our ability to use it efficiently or wisely in many cases.
That's true. So keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Tough times out there.
I was waiting for some incidental
for the sake of our
music.
Children. Let me see. What's some good incidental music for the great apocalypse? Let me see. What do we got here?
The duck story.
No, that's not apocalypse music.
Oh, that's that inappropriate. That's not
right.
Appropriate.
Okay.
Step lively. The sooner we get to the waterhole, the sooner we can leave.
I just can't wait to be king. No, that's not going to happen. All right, I'm going to stop this foolishness.
Okay. All right, well, I think that brings us to our main topic tonight.
Podcasting with a child.
Yes. What we forgot to tell you is Mark is only 6 years old but has a deep voice.
I've been sick. Oh. See, Ray and I had the audio test that we're just like crying. We're laughing so hard just because I kept digging up crazy incidental music, making him laugh and distracting him terribly.
No.
He said, it's like podcasting with a child. What? And your point would be what?
Yeah.
This is good stuff.
It is. It is.
I would pay money to listen to me.
This is what we should send to stamps.com.
Perfect.
Squarespace. MeUndies.
So what's the big topic of the evening, Ray?
Well, the big topic of the evening is transitions and how there really isn't much in life that prepares you for the major transitions you run into. There's not a lot of transitional training, transitional planning. It just kind of,
OJT.
It just comes at you.
Yep. And yep, absolutely.
One of the, the real big ones you run into is you get out of college or graduate school, and or even high school, and you've pretty much spent like the last 20 years learning how to be a student, and hopefully by the end of that 20 years, you've gotten really good at being a student. But you have no idea about what it's like living on your own, being your own person, getting a job, going to work, dealing with all those issues and all that stress. I mean, the freedom's great, but it comes with a little bit of a price. And it can be a shock, going into the work world, trying to figure out who you are. Because, again, your identity is wrapped up in being a student. And, you maybe have gone into profession or some sort of vocational training, and then all of a sudden, boom, you're no longer a student. You are whatever you wanted to be, hopefully. And where do you go from there?
Exactly. I've always found it ironic that the biggest life decisions we make, for example, marriage, career, we tend to make before we have any life experience yet. We haven't really figured out what this is all about. But of course, we'd probably be too old to reproduce once we figured out what it's all about. But like, I never had a burning desire to practice law per se. It's just, growing up, my dad was, an exec with General Electric. And so I thought that was pretty cool. I would like to be like my dad and go to work in a suit, just be a suit. That'd be kind of cool. But I think goals are fabulous. But at the end of the day, the big takeaway at this age, at least for me, is that the keys to a successful life are to be nimble, flexible, and adaptable. You got to figure out how to be happy or be en route to being happy, or you're just wasting time. And the way I visualized, at least in my life, is that after college, it's as if you're standing on the edge of a fast-running river, and you're planning a life and career that lies directly across from you on the river. So it's great to have the plan, but as soon as you set foot in the water, you're going to start getting carried downstream. So you can fight the current and you can be miserable at the fact that you're off course, you're not where you plan to be, this isn't unfolding the way you had envisioned, or you can be adaptable, be happy and be able to do something productive wherever you happen to hit shore. And I think the ability to let go of preconceived notions is largely a key to being happy in life. Everything's transient, nothing's permanent. As much as we want to hang on to the things that make us happy or hang on to our master plan, at the end of the day, all we're left with are moments, so we have to get as many of them and have them be as positive as possible.
Yeah, and I ended up in a career that wasn't at all what I started out doing. I started out, in the seminary, and that didn't work out, and so I went into social work, which I think was maybe a little bit of a compromise. It's like, well, all right, I'm not going to be a priest, I'm not going to do religious life. Being a social worker is close.
So. And that was the career that I had chosen for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was actually shocked.
Yeah, I know.
That you defied me and went off in a different direction.
You and my parents. Well, actually, no, they were upset I left the seminary. But yeah, you get there, and it's funny. There were so many guys in social work when I started that were ex-seminarians, like everywhere I worked in the first couple of jobs. You get there, and you start doing it, and yeah, I could do it on an intellectual level. I understood the theory, but it just wasn't me. My older daughter is an amazing social worker. She's out there in jails and courts and on the streets and totally comfortable and totally competent, and she understands the theory and she's really, really sharp. But it's also just feeling comfortable in those situations, which I never was that comfortable. So I always had an interest in technology, and back when I was starting out, you know, there was this whole information revolution that was going on, and it also trickled down to human services. And a lot of human service agencies and state agencies needed the technology but couldn't find people that could do it. And I thought, well, here's this whole new area that's just opening up. And I just fell right into it, and I loved it. And it's what I'm still doing now. And it's been great. But, you know, I didn't foresee that ever happening. I thought I would be in social work for the rest of my life and had kind of planned it that way. And you just never know what's going to happen. But it's, you know, kind of along the lines of what you were saying about letting go is you do have to let go, and you can't just like sit and wait for stuff to happen. I've run into a lot of people over the years that are in jobs that where they're really not happy and they're just waiting it out. Back when I was working in drug rehab, they used to call that jailing it. And they're just basically jailing it at their jobs. They're just sitting there waiting to hit the lottery, waiting for retirement, and just totally miserable. And you got to make it happen. You got to figure out what works for you, what doesn't, what's going to make getting out of bed and going to work in the morning interesting and fulfilling for you.
And that's actually the stage I'm at right now and the puzzle I'm kind of working with right now, because I've been doing this long enough where I know where the areas are in my professional program that kind of need work. But the problem is I work within a large agency bureaucracy, and so I can't, all the change cannot come from me. And so if I can't accomplish that, then do I just jail it? or do I ratchet it back to a layer which is just not challenging, because I can't do the creative stuff? In which case, where does that leave you? You know, and how many years do you plan to work? You know, so it's never easy, but the idea is, I think, always be nimble and be adaptable and be happy, because at the end of the day, that's all you got.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that's kept me going, I've been at the same job since 92, is that I've had the ability to be creative in that position. I've been able to kind of create the position I've always wanted. And that's been great. I mean, not everyone can do that. To whatever extent you can, you have to create your own environment. You create your own happy situation at work. And I think that's important. You can't sit passively and hope things are going to get better, or blame the other guy or your boss or, you know, whatever. It's up to you to kind of take control of things a little bit. Yeah, the other big thing I'm dealing with now is, and you're pretty close behind me, is thinking about retirement. It's another thing where there's a lot of financial preparation for retirement out there, but no one ever talks about, well, what do you do after you retire? I mean, you're just supposed to just like go to work every single day and then just stop and then just not do anything. I don't know. I can't quite get my head around what retirement means. It's one of those transitions where I don't know what to do. I got really good at going to work every day, and I've been doing that for like the last 35 years. So, and it was tough. It was tough going from being a student to working, and eventually you get really good at working. How do you get good at not working?
And I think the other thing is that there's something about the annoyances of being in the workplace that's actually good for your brain. It keeps you engaged. A certain degree of frustration, a healthy degree, kind of keeps you creative, I think. I've known people where as soon as they retire, you start talking to them, you can tell the wheels are running more slowly. It's almost like they're slipping a bit. And I don't think it's good for them. And so somehow in retirement, you have to find a way to stay engaged and creative and kind of edgy in your own way, doing your own thing. But sitting on the couch eating Fritos is probably not the way to go.
Yeah.
I watch HGTV.
Yeah. Well, that's the way a lot of retirement, though, is portrayed. Well, it's kind of one extreme or the other. Either it's very active retirement, like in the drug commercials where everyone's out, you know, sailing boats and doing all sorts of fun things with the grandchildren. Or it's, you know, this is my time. This is like the big me time. I'm going to just sit and do whatever I want and be disengaged. And, you know, that's a relatively recent thing, the whole retirement as disengagement from society. I think that's something that sprung up, you know, in the last century.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people are living longer too. So, I mean, retirement was never meant to be originally to be this long. And people, you know, once you retire, you could have a good, you know, 30 years of not working on a regular basis.
Now, one thing I always, whenever the conversation gets to this area, I always talk about another friend of mine who just always cracked me up because it's like it's still 1975 with him. He will start talking and it'll sound like he's 16 again. And in with all the insanity are these tidbits of truth that it's just funny to hear them because it's like... you know, a childlike observation that's really onto something. But when we were talking about midlife transitions and struggles, and what my friend told me is he said, well, I mean, the way I view it is it's obvious. I mean, it's obvious why people go through this. And I said, well, what are you talking about? And he goes, well, I mean, it's very pragmatic. It's like, what is love? I mean, who needs love? Love is just a narcotic that will get you to reproduce. And once you reproduce, you have to hang around long enough to raise your children. But once they can fend for themselves, your biological duty is to keel over and die. You know, but medical science will keep you alive for another 50 years. So, wow, surprise, you're going to be walking around going, what in the world am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm. So
it goes, yeah. There's your disconnect. And I thought to myself, that is nuts, but that's incredibly logical. What next? What now?
Trolling for nuggets of podcast gold here.
Let me see.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime cow. Send me a kiss by wire. Baby, my heart's on fire.
Sorry.
Is that the Warner Brothers Singing Frog?
That's the Singing Frog. Michigan J. Frog.
I didn't know he had a name.
He does.
Wow. Very cool.
That's true. Let me see. Early 1960s Mattel talking hand puppets TV commercial. There's a winner.
I had one of those. I had a talking Bugs Bunny hand puppet.
Oh, me too.
Did you really?
Me too. You pulled the string?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, like, what's up, Doc? And I don't remember what else he said.
Yeah. What's up, Doc?
Yeah.
Had the carrot and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. I had that same puppet.
How cool is that?
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yep. Yep, see, after all these years, you find out. It's Halloween.
Oh, yeah, the Munsters. Oh, and if you're listening to the podcast, and we know you are, write in and let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you think works, and if you've got ideas for things you'd like to hear us talk about.
And if you like incidental music from Jeopardy or anything else, let me know. I'm just a technological whiz here. Always have your phone nearby.
The problem is you want to be Boom Boom Brannigan, and I want to be Ira Glass. And that's the problem with this podcast.
That's what makes it so fascinating. We coexist in the same Petri dish. It's just an amazing thing.
It is.
Get out of here, punk.
Okay. Is that Rawhide?
No, Good, the Bad, the Ugly.
Oh, okay. It's a Sergio Leone Western?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Spaghetti Western.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, this episode has just moved along because of my soundboard.
I think you got to get one.
Stop it with the sound effects. It's not raining. Stop it. There is no train in your room. Stop it. It'd be perfect.
Oh, yes. Yes, yes.
See, trains. Train sounds. T-R-A-I-N. Train. Ooh, train sounds. Here we go. Hold on a second. This is going to be good. Relaxing train journey, 10-hour video with soothing sounds for relaxation. Here we go. Next stop, Willoughby.
Oh, Thank you.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Cathartic Yardstick. We're not jailing it. We made this podcast.
It's like podcasting with a child.